Mr. Price and Mr. Adams, I thought just to prod you gentlemen, I would quote two sentences about collecting and see what you think of them. The first is from Ralph Waldo Emerson. Mr. Emerson said, "A collector recently bought at public auction in London for 175 guineas an autograph of Shakespeare, but for nothing a schoolboy can read Hamlet." Well, chew on that for a second. The second one is even nastier. This is written by Shane Leslie, an English critic. "The book collector is the hermaphrodite of literature, neither a reader nor a writer." Now, these are probably two of the most invidious statements ever made about collecting. Mr. Adams, do you think either of them is...
This is a program we call Conversation. It's dedicated to the art of good talk. Our host is Clifton Fadiman, editor of the American Treasury. His guests tonight are actor and art expert Vincent Price, and Frederick B. Adams, Jr., director of the Pierpont Morgan Library. Our guests are talking about their wonderful world of collecting. And now, as we turn up our microphones, Frederick B. Adams is speaking.
Well, I'd just like to say that anybody who bought an autograph of Shakespeare for £175 must have died a very rich man, whereas the boy that read Hamlet for nothing might have died poor.
This is a defense of collecting on a commercial basis.
Purely commercial.
By the way, are there autographs of Shakespeare?
Yes, there are about four or five signatures that are thought to be more or less authentic.
What would one be worth now? This was written, I suppose, about 100 years ago.
Well, you ought to be able to get $50,000 for one, perhaps.
For a good one.
If it could definitely be authenticated.
$50,000?
Yes.
Say, you know, Emerson begins to look like a fool.
And I'd like to meet the schoolboy who can read Hamlet. It took me 20 years.
Well, you gentlemen are collectors by profession and for the delight of it. And, of course, it needs no real defense. But I do think it needs an explanation. Why do people collect? When did you begin collecting, Mr. Price?
Well, I began when I was about 9 years old. You see, I'm from Missouri, and that's Indian country, and I was fascinated in the Cahokia Indians, arrowheads and pottery, and began to learn about Indian lore that way.
That's typical boy stuff.
Absolutely.
How long did you keep it up?
Well, I'm still keeping it up. I have the largest collection of prehistoric American Indian pottery.
Have you really?
Well, yes, I have a lot of it.
Well, now, since there's, of late, there's been a great deal of interest developed in just that period. So what probably began as a mere hobby now perhaps has considerable historical importance.
Yes, it has great historical importance, and it's one of the purposes of collecting, I think, is the people who are avidly fond of things do protect them from damage and from being stolen and just being lost to sight.
I think that's a very fair statement. In fact, one of the great pleasures of collecting is to save something from destruction.
You know, one of the things that seems to me is a very important point of collecting is the collector collecting contemporarily. In other words, the book collector who collects first editions or rare books of his own time and the collector who collects paintings of his own time.
How about your own case, Mr. Price?
Well, I am particularly interested in contemporary American art.
Is it because it's cheaper? I don't...
Well, one reason is because I can afford it. There's no question about that. But also, somebody has to collect it, and it's been neglected a great deal.
There's a great deal of fun in backing your judgment against the field, too.
That's right. Rather than letting somebody tell you what you should collect.
That's it. The people who collect now, Renoir and Cezanne and so on, are so late.
Yes, all right.
Whereas if you'd been in Chicago, let's say, in the 1880s and had collected them, you'd have been in at the very beginning of the present boom.
It's very much like picking an unknown growth stock out of the stock market and backing your fancy on that.
You have more advisors in the stock market case.
Definitely.
Nothing but advisors.
Nobody wants to make up their mind about contemporary art of any kind.
When we're kids, Mr. Price was referring to his arrowhead collections, I think we collect largely as a magpie does.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it gives the young boy a sense of power to have all the cigarette pictures of a certain series, irrespective of whether he's in the least interested in it.
Well, when I was a boy and collected stamps, you know, I started out with one of those packets, 4,000 for $1.
Yeah.
And I bought one of the big junior stamp albums, and I remember the first page that I filled. You know, I got every space on that page covered with a stamp. That was a terrific achievement.
Isn't it?
It meant nothing.
No, it meant nothing. But don't you think it has the same, it affords the same kind of pleasure that working out a jigsaw puzzle does?
Absolutely.
Just to
yes.
get your page covered, yes. irrespective of whether it has any value or interest.
I had a lovely thing happen. I have two nieces who are now grown up, but at one time they were collecting match boxes, you know, match folders.
Yes.
And I was in Europe for 2 years, and I was in the sewers of Paris and the canals of Venice collecting these match folders. Arrived back with 2,000 of them, terribly proud of them, only to find that they had stopped collecting match folders. I was left with a very large collection.
Collection, I like to say collection is protection. That is, there's a certain sense of coziness that you get when you know that you have cornered everything in a single field. It gives you a kind of protection against the world. It enhances your own personality and gives you a symbolic feeling of power. Think there's anything in that?
Well, it would be true if it were possible, but you can't corner everything in a particular field. You can have the best collection known in a particular field, but I defy you to really corner the market.
No, it'd be absolutely impossible in any field of art.
Well, now, let's see. I was just reading the other day of Carolyn Wells' collection of Whitman, and she, I think, mentions that she cornered one edition, of which there are only five, one issue, which there are only five copies. You might manage to get all
those. That is indeed possible, but...
But another one might turn up.
One might easily turn up.
That's true.
You know that there were only five Tamerlanes in existence 22 years ago? And
that's the great Edgar Allan Poe first.
Yes, and now there are about 11 or 12 known. They've been turning up in attics all over the United States.
Isn't that curious that as soon as a call goes out for a rarity, the rarity suddenly becomes less rare?
Yes, because people begin to look for it.
Mr. Price, you were saying that there's an attraction in backing the contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's true, because there your own judgment is the only one in play. But is there not also the delight in making contact with the past?
Oh, yes.
There are individual collectors, aren't there, who collect such things as old Wild West novels and Americana of that kind, are still possible to the collector of modest
means. Yes, that's true.
And that like Beetledime novels?
Yes, old Alger books. Well, doesn't that give you not a real grip on the past, but at least some sense of connection with it that you might not ordinarily get merely by reading about the past?
It's interesting that the collecting of books on the United States, that's as distinguished from books on America, really didn't get underway in this country until about 50 years ago. Now, of course, it's one of the most popular forms of book collecting.
But wouldn't you say that it took us a couple of generations to have a past and to get a sense of it?
Well, the English still don't recognize that we have a past that goes...
But it's true about American painting, too, that only in the past 10 years have people really seriously begun to collect other than the very earliest painting in America.
We're trying now to pin down what makes the collector tick. Isn't there one other factor, would you say, very similar to the huntsman's instinct? This is a form of hunting, surely.
Oh, I think so. I think the greatest fun for the collector is to make a find. And you make them in the most improbable places. I found a very rare Matisse lithograph last year for $1, and it was sold to me for $1 simply because the man thought it was very, very ugly, and indeed it was. It was very ugly.
Is it very valuable?
It's very valuable and very rare.
Are there many such lucky turns of fortune in your business, Mr. Adams?
Oh, yes. 4 years ago, I got a letter that was written on a piece of paper without any letterhead, just addressed to the Morgan Library in New York, you know, no street address or anything. And it offered us the original manuscript of Perrault's Tales of Mother Goose. Now, in 100 years of careful research by French scholars, no such thing has ever been discovered as the original manuscript of Mother Goose. But over a period of some months, we investigated it very carefully, and it turned out to be absolutely right.
Really? Wonderful.
And here, here is the manuscript of the tales that we know as Sleeping Beauty and Puss in Boots and Bluebeard and Little Red Riding Hood, Cinderella.
Just the opposite of a wild mother goose chase. It turned out all right.
I thought it was going to turn out to be that.
That's lovely.
There are many items in your own collections, I'm sure, that you prize most highly. When I speak of your own collection, Mr. Adams, I don't mean the Pierpont Morgan Library, which, of course, has almost everything. But you yourself are a private collector, are you not?
Yes, I have very modest pretensions in compared to the Morgan Library.
Who isn't?
Well, the Morgan Library is just a mark for everyone else to shoot at. But what's your particular field?
Well, I collect some of these moderns that Mr. Price has been talking about.
First editions?
First editions, autograph manuscripts, letters.
How's the market?
The market is varies, of course, with the increase in importance of the writer that you collect. I remember when I first started collecting Evelyn Waugh and Hemingway, you could get them very cheaply. But now they're rather important.
I ask because I have a special personal reason. When I was 17 years old, I decided to go into the rare book business, Mr. Adams, and borrowed from my elder brother the large sum of $100 with which I started a collection of first editions. I merely want to say that after working very hard through the mails for a year and a half, I had run my $100 up to $107, at which point I retired.
$7 profit, and I love it.
I think you did very well.
I think so, too. Conversation will be back in a moment after this word from Time Magazine.
Would you be willing to send me a postcard right now if it would help you move up the ladder of success in your business, career, and social life? Of course you would. Well, then listen. One postcard right now will bring you almost 6 full months of Time for about 8 cents a week. A real money-saving value you can't afford to miss. Each week, Time Magazine offers much more than just the news by adding the revealing background information and important highlights you just can't get from any other source at any price. Everything you want to know and should know to add sparkle to your conversation is delivered right to your home every single week. National and foreign news, the latest developments in medicine, science, and business, the famous Time reviews of radio and television, new books, new plays, new movies, the latest happenings in education, art, politics, religion, and much more. There's just no other single source of news that offers you so much good reading and so much valuable information so quickly and clearly. You'll find Time is the most enjoyable and interesting magazine you can have in your home. So don't delay and lose out. At 8 cents a week, this is truly a sensational offer. You'll receive the next 23 exciting issues of Time Magazine, all for the money-saving low price of only $1.97. A real savings under the regular rate. Send no money. Time will bill you later. Just rush a card with your name and address to Time Magazine, NBC Radio, New York City. That's a card with your name and address to Time Magazine, NBC Radio, New York City. And now we rejoin our conversationalists who are discussing collecting. Clifton Fadiman is speaking.
How about your own field, Mr. Price? You were giving us some idea.
Well, I'm a kind of a general overall collector. I collect for a very definite purpose. Where I live in California, we are so scattered that a great many of the small colleges and high schools and clubs and art clubs don't have any works of art to look at. But I collect to lend, and I get a great kick out of it, not for altruistic reasons, but because when they come back, they are fresh experiences all over again.
Well, I think that is altruistic.
So I try to fill in gaps. I mean, for instance, now Greek art is not very chic. You know, all the museums have the Greek art they need, so you can buy pretty important examples of Greek art for very little money. But I also collect primitive art, and I collect contemporary painting.
That covers a pretty broad field. Now I'm going to ask you whether you collect for profit at all. So far, it sounded...
No, I don't. I've lived off of it a couple of times.
Yeah.
Lean periods in an actor's life. I've sold some things and done very well. Better than if I'd had an investment, as a matter of fact.
That's
I started buying Modiglianis, for instance, when they were $50 when I was in college 25 years ago.
How did you know enough to know that?
I really didn't. I just liked him. He seemed to me very funny and amusing and witty. And then he grew in seriousness as a painter after that, so...
Well, then you must have a flair. And, Mr. Adams, in your experience, you must have come across collectors who have this mysterious thing called flair.
They do, and sometimes they make a collection and sell it and make another collection and sell it and go on right to the end of their lives.
It's great fun. It's great education.
How would you explain this flair? What makes one person sense in advance of what more people are going to like 20 years from now. Is there any way of explaining it?
Well, it's one way of explaining it, of course, is that the man looks around for what is unfashionable and what appeals to him. It must appeal to the collector, or he's not going to make a good collection.
That's a very important point.
Now, if it appeals to him and it's unfashionable, then he's wise to go ahead and buy in that field. For instance, today, the Morgan Library happens to be buying a good deal of Ruskin material.
Are you? Now, there's a man that I should have thought would be completely out of fashion and more than that, never come back.
He is completely out of fashion, but he'll always have a place art criticism and also in literature of the 19th century.
What would you say the present trends in your respective fields are?
Well, I would say that the modern trend, and I mean really today, is away from European art. Americans have looked to Europe for their cultural background and their immediate cultural identification long enough.
Yes.
And I think that they are now identifying themselves with the art of their own time, what is being produced by the painters and sculptors and lithographers and ceramists of the United States of America.
Would you say then that the big market and the whole post-impressionist school has probably reached its height?
I think it's gone because most of the great pictures are already in museums or in great collections, and nobody can afford them.
How about Asiatic art? I know there's been considerable interest in that.
The greatest collectors in the world are the Japanese of their own art. And any great piece of Japanese art that comes on the market will be bought by a Japanese.
You know, there's an interesting thing about Japanese collectors. They really do put their things away. They have a separate little building that they put their art collections in, and they'll bring just one out and put it in the living room for an honored guest.
The lovely thing, too, is that you can always tell where you stand as an honored guest by the type of tea they serve you and the picture they put up in your honor.
Wouldn't you say that inasmuch as the Japanese are great collectors of their own art, therefore there'll be a rarity market in it as far as we are concerned, it would be a good idea from the commercial point of view to try to collect Japanese art?
Oh, that's absolutely true. If you could get your hands on it, you should really take it.
Mr. Price, what's the oddest experience that ever happened to you in the course of your collecting?
In the field of collecting? Well, I think one of the great excitements about collecting is mistakes. Mistakes you make and are forced to live with.
Did you ever make one that was a beaut, as Mr. LaGuardia once said?
A big boo-boo, yes. I bought one time a drawing that I absolutely adored, and it was by Vincent van Gogh, and I paid a lot of money for it, for me. And I soon found out that it was not right. Well, I went to endless trouble to prove that it wasn't right or to justify my own purchase. I've never found out which, because I loved this drawing even when they told me it was a fake. I didn't keep it, unfortunately, because I couldn't involve myself in that much of an expenditure.
Yeah.
But it was the biggest boo-boo I ever made, and I learned a lesson.
Well, that's candid of you. How about you, Mr. Adams?
Well, of course, we're constantly in danger of being caught by something like that. I remember I almost bought a book 2 years ago for the Morgan Library, which was extremely rare and very expensive, several thousand dollars. And I discovered after we had sent the money off to Italy to pay for the book that it was a forgery. And the man in Italy fortunately said that he wanted dollars instead of the lira that we had transmitted to him. And so he returned the check to the bank, and we were able to stop payment, and that was the end of that.
Wonderful. Mr. Fadiman, I know a lovely story about shells. You know, there are a lot of people who collect shells.
Conchologists?
Yes. And during the 19th century, there was a very rare shell that brought an enormous price, and it was from a great depth off the Philippine coast. And so the Japanese decided to fake this shell, and they made it, and of course the market was soon flooded, so the price went down. Then the shell was found by deep sea divers in great quantity, the real one. So now the fake Japanese shell is very, very rare.
Now that's a lovely story.
I adore it.
What other odd things do people collect? Shells perhaps are not so strange because they have a beauty of their own and a rarity, though not in this case.
Yeah.
Can you think of any other odd things people collect?
Oh, well, buttons are to me one of the most fascinating things. Why people collect buttons, I don't know, and yet I've seen extraordinarily beautiful buttons in collections.
I had a connection of my family at one time who collected streetcar transfers. Now, that seems to me about as rare as anything. And he used to travel all over the United States
transferring. Oh, I love it.
But that's about as strange a one as I can think of.
One of the fascinating things about collecting, too, is that if you're a real collector, you never go anywhere without an inner vision. Because somewhere around the corner is going to be that treasure that you've looked for all your life. And it's there a lot of times.
Well, perhaps not a lot of times.
You've been listening to Conversation, a series of programs dedicated to the art of good talk. Our host was Clifton Fadiman, author of Party of One. His guests tonight were Vincent Price, who is currently preparing a television series called Collector's Item, and Frederick B. Adams, Jr., director of the Pierpont Morgan Library, which is now celebrating the 50th anniversary of the completion of its building.